Journalist Roy Gutman has just completed a book about U.S. foreign policy in Nicaragua from 1981 to 1987. He concludes that our policymaking process was as inept as it was politicized, as corrupt as it was chaotic, and that it resulted in the biggest scandal of Reagan's administration. Gutman says our foreign policy in Nicaragua had more in common with the foreign policy of the banana republics of the past than of a superpower in the late 20th century. Roy Gutman's new book is titled Banana Diplomacy. He's the national security correspondent for New York Newsday and a former reporter for Reuters, where he worked for 11 years. Gutman returned from his latest trip to Central America Friday night, just in time for him to cover the shooting down of the Iranian airliner by the United States. I asked him if it was disorienting to be suddenly yanked away to cover Iran while he was in the middle of evaluating what he had just seen in Central America.
Well, you get used to it after a while because that's the way the news breaks. You spend months, perhaps, working on an arms control negotiation between the United States and the Soviet Union, and then all of a sudden, just as the Secretary of State is sent to the Middle East or decides he should go to the Middle East, so the reporters covering foreign affairs and national security have to go with him. And you have to relearn or learn, in some cases, the issues from the scratch. Central America is another tangle of such complication that I think it takes every minute of the time you're there to even try to get your bearings, and you hardly get them before the trip is over. And as you say, then you come, in my case, one comes back Friday night from Central America, and by Sunday there's a different kind of crisis.
Were you awakened in the middle of the night?
No, I was actually I was taking a nap Sunday and was wakened by my office and asked to come in and try to write about the policy aspects, the policy implications of the shoot down, and to try to think through where we should go from there in terms of our own coverage.
Let's get you back to Central America. You just came back from a trip to Central America, and the U.S. policy in Nicaragua from 1981 to 87 is the subject of your new book, Banana Diplomacy. What was the purpose of your visit to Central America?
Well, I was one of the reporters accompanying the Secretary of State on his trip to the region. He went to each of the Central American countries with the exception of Nicaragua. It was his first trip to the area in about 2 years, maybe the first trip dealing with Central American issues per se, and that's especially the Nicaragua conflict, in about 4 years. What his aim was is still something of a mystery to me. The aim, as his aides described it before he left, was to try to come up with a long-term policy that could be supported by both parties, as opposed to what has happened over the last 7 years, which has been a very partisan policy, and to unite the Central American countries with the United States in this policy. And what does it mean? Well, it comes down to how do you deal with a leftist government, which is right in the center of Central America? Do you try to overthrow them? Do you try to come to terms with them? And frankly, I didn't know on leaving Washington just what his approach was. And the sad thing is, coming back, I still don't know exactly what his approach is. But what I did conclude in the course of the 3 days that we were there is that the secretary himself may not understand the complexity of the issues, the fact that one or other factors or partners or people or groups there have the ability to manipulate and to affect U.S. policy in a way that we don't understand, and that maybe he doesn't understand until after it happens. And then if you look back, you see, and you have to ask the question, how the devil did we get into that? And that's what my conclusion is from this trip.
What shape are the Contras in the post-Iran-Contra scandal era, and also now that the United States has cut off aid to the Contras?
Well, in military terms, they're in a pretty poor and sad state. There may be only 2,000 or 3,000 in Nicaragua now, compared to perhaps 10 or 12 or even more thousand 6 months ago. They are dependent on I don't know how those who are deep inside the country get their food, but those who are near the border are reluctant, are having to rely on food shipments and deliveries from the border area with Honduras. There is no fighting going on now, no major fighting going on, but I'm sure there are skirmishes. The ceasefire is more or less holding. Now, that's the military side of things. The political side of things is really in even greater disarray right now. The leadership, the civilian leadership, and these are Nicaraguans of varying political backgrounds, really don't know what to do. They don't know what U.S. policy is. What does the United States intend to do with them? Are we going to give them more money and rev up the war again? Are we going to invite them all to come to Miami? Are we going to just try to keep the movement alive until the next president comes along? And it was in this spirit of spirit of confusion, if I could call it that, that I think they took an action early in June that had a very major effect on U.S. policy.
What action are you referring to?
Well, June 9th in Managua, the civilian leadership of the Contras were meeting with the Sandinistas. They were negotiating over a permanent ceasefire. And unexpectedly, at least to most reporters who were there and most observers, the Contras suddenly announced new demands, and they gave a very sharp, very tight deadline to the Sandinistas. And the Sandinistas rejected it, whereupon the Contras walked out. Now, that meant a breakdown in the negotiations, and it was a very serious breakdown because there was no time set for additional talks. And the impact of that is something we're still feeling. You see, the Central American countries, all of them agreed with Nicaragua on a peace process. And the peace process consists of different things in different countries, but essentially it is the central government has to negotiate with the armed opposition and with the internal opposition, political opposition, in each country to the extent that there is a problem. So when, and the Nicaragua problem and battle and war is really the most serious right now, still the major one. So when the Contras walked out of that set of talks, it led almost automatically to a major crisis in Central America. Suddenly, the leaders of Central America started asking the United States, what are you going to do next? Are you going to simply leave this peace process here?
So do you think that the Contras intentionally walked out trying to provoke the United States to declare what their policy is going to be toward the Contras?
Well, that, as a matter of fact, is exactly it. I talked to several Contra leaders in Guatemala after they saw Schultz, Secretary of State Schultz, last Thursday night, and they told me that it was a deliberate action in order to provoke a crisis, to precipitate a situation in which the United States had to act. Now, they had different goals in mind. I mean, they would like to get a resumption of military aid, which is something that I think politically is impossible here. They also wanted to get the United States more deeply involved after about a year of sort of a hands-off attitude by the administration, in which it was neither supporting the Contras in the negotiations, nor was it advising them to back out, nor was it helping the Central American countries, nor was it dealing with the Sandinistas. So they wanted to force a decision. And, you know, in a sense, it was a brilliant move because they forced exactly what they wanted. They got Schultz to come down, to travel through the region, to start to denounce the Sandinistas, to start to consider whether to put up another military aid package.
To heat things up again.
Right. But
Let me reintroduce you. My guest is Roy Guttman, and he's a national security correspondent for New York Newsday and author of the new book, Banana Diplomacy, The Making of American Policy in Nicaragua, 1981 to 1987. Now, another thing that's happening with the Contras now is that there was an attempt to oust the top commander of the Contras, Colonel Enrique Bermudez. Now, is there a lot of infighting going on in the Contras right now that's jeopardizing their strength?
It's inevitable. When you have an army with a kind of a loose connection to a civilian leadership, and the army has itself been fairly loosely run, it's been task forces reporting to Bermudez over the years and him giving them an awful lot of leeway, it's kind of inevitable when the principal source of support, namely the United States, falls away and itself doesn't have a clear policy on where it wants to go, that you will have infighting, you will have divisions, you will have people wanting to get rid of other people. It's one of those really sad things to witness, and that's what's happening right now.
Now, my understanding is the CIA is backing Bermudez, and Bermudez is one of the first in the cast of leading characters in the story of the creation of the Contras.
He really is. I'm not sure, frankly, how active the CIA is right now. It's just a bit of a mystery to me because they don't have an official role. They don't have any money to spend. I think the only thing they have is the contacts with the individuals, which they can maintain at least on an informal level if they don't have any support. But Bermudez is one of these people who was there from the beginning, and he's there right now as what appears to be the end is coming.
Let's talk about who he is, because he's one of the people who helps start the Contras. He was a colonel in Somoza's National Guard. What was his idea when he wanted to start a group to oust the Sandinistas?
Well, his idea was, I think, if you want to reduce it to the essence, it was power. The Sandinistas had usurped power. They weren't going to run the country well. In all fairness, Bermudez did not come up with the idea of starting the Contras or starting what is now called the Contras. He was approached by a group of National Guard officers who were in Miami or in Central America and who asked him to take over. Now, the reason they asked him to take over is itself an interesting point, mm-hmm. because unlike most of them, including the people who asked him, he had never held a command post in Nicaragua under Somoza. He was at the Nicaraguan embassy in Washington during the Sandinista Revolution. I found a Sandinista comandante, Luis Carrion, and I quote him in the book, as saying that Bermudez was uncorrupted. He was not one of those people with blood on his hands. He was reasonably competent. Luis Carrion said that he could understand that why Bermudez was chosen. So he came in with his own background was somewhat different from most of the National Guard commanders. Secondly, he's an engineer. He did see some service in the Dominican Republic when there was an international force sent there by the OAS. I think it was in 1965. But he really didn't have much combat experience. He certainly didn't have experience as a guerrilla commander. But, of course, he was not the only one. But picking him was one key factor. And it is, as you've noted, it is remarkable. He's still there, and he probably still is the key factor.
Now, another person early on in the story was Colonel Gustavo Alvarez Martinez, who was the head of the National Police in Honduras. And I think it was he who proposed to Casey, who was head of the CIA at the time, that the U.S. back anti-Sandinista insurgents in Honduras.
Yes, now Alvarez is an especially interesting character. He's like so many people in the Reagan administration who came to support the Contras. Now, Alvarez is a zealous anti-communist. He's a military commander, I think of probably some skill. He also had, and you might find this ironic to hear, I think that Alvarez was the only person closely involved with the force at any point who really had a strategy. Now, his strategy will sound wacky in terms of, U.S. domestic politics, but in terms of military logic, I think it was pretty sound. And the strategy was this, and this is what he proposed to Casey in about April of 81. The strategy was for the Contras, for the United States to back the Contras, to give support and supplies and perhaps training. For Honduras to provide a springboard for the Contras, sanctuary from which they could operate, bases to which they could return. Now, they would form, I don't know if he had an idea of exactly what the numbers would be, but there probably would be a few thousand. And what they would do was to mount raids into Nicaragua and provoke the Sandinistas. The Sandinistas would then respond, and I think he underestimated the Sandinistas, or maybe overestimated them, but he didn't get them right. And he figured that they would maybe even invade Honduras. whereupon the United States would come to the rescue of Honduras, invade, use this as an excuse, invade Nicaragua, throw out the Sandinista government, and, you know, you'd have a new government there.
So the idea initially wasn't to overthrow the Sandinistas, but to, through military actions, provoke the Sandinistas into maybe invading Honduras so that then we could take action against them.
Right. He never thought the Contras could do it on their own. And mm-hmm. I don't think any Contra leader did either. Only mm-hmm. some people here with fantasies in Washington ever thought that could be the case.
Now, once the United States started actually supporting the Contras, did the people who were in on that policy agree that that was the ultimate strategy?
You know, it's interesting. I don't know how many of them actually knew what Alvarez's intention was.
Mm-hmm.
They came to discover it in time because Alvarez became the military commander in Honduras, the head of the armed forces, about early 82, the beginning of 82. So he was in a position to control everything that happened in Honduras with the CIA, for example, and to try to direct things in the direction of his strategy. Whether he explained it to everybody, whether they all understood or not is another question, or whether some of them understood but pretended not to understand was another question, because there came, within a very short time, to be all sorts of disputes between Alvarez and the CIA in how to manage the Contras.
We're talking about the Contras, and my guest is Roy Gutman, who is national security correspondent for New York Newsday, and he's written a book about the history of the Contras and the history of U.S. policy toward Nicaragua. The book is titled Banana Diplomacy. We're going to take a short break, then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Roy Gutman is my guest, and we're discussing the Contras and U.S. policy in Nicaragua. His new book is titled Banana Diplomacy. A lot of people assume that the CIA basically started the Contras.
Yeah, and I don't...
What's the story with that?
Well, they played a key role. They William Casey played a personal role in helping start them up, but I think that is just not the case. I think it is one of these ideas that came in over the transom. That's to say, a number of people had the same idea. Bermudez was called in by his former fellow officers. Alvarez of Honduras went to the United States and offered his strategy for how to use this kind of force. Then you had people on the conservative end of the spectrum, John Carbo, who was working for Senator Helms at the time, and one of his friends from North Carolina who made a real effort to interest the CIA and sort of form a bridge. And this group, together with a man from Washington, the publisher of a Spanish-language newspaper, they went to Argentina and helped convince the Argentines that they should provide the seed money. Now, the seed money was there, and maybe the CIA was sending kind of winks and nods, Casey at least was, or maybe other people. And so you had these various things coalescing around the summer of 1981. And I think what probably made it work was when in August of 81, and this is 4 months before Congress is notified, when Casey sent his deputy for Central America to Honduras to give the go-ahead. Now, so the CIA played an important role, but I don't think you could say that they created this force out of nothing. It was there, and other people were working on it very actively.
Now, before our break, we were talking about how it was one of the initial ideas behind the Contras was to provoke the Sandinistas into making a military blunder that would help give a reason for the United States to overthrow the Sandinistas, basically. Now, the CIA tried something that I think they called perception management. That was a similar idea, really, spreading the idea that the U.S. was planning an invasion of Nicaragua in order to goad the Sandinistas into doing something stupid that could trigger a military move.
You know, it's an interesting, the perception management. If you think of the pattern, here you have a Honduran leader telling the United States basically you should invade. Then you have, and I talked to some of the Sandinista comandantes, and I asked them, did you ever think the United States was really going to invade, or if you did, why did you? And they told me, I think Bayardo Arce was one in particular, that early in 1982, after the Argentine trainers began working with the Contras in Honduras and training them there and also in Argentina, that they had infiltrated the what were what is this, I'm not sure just when they came to be known as Contras, but they had infiltrated the former National Guard ranks and it learned from the Argentines that indeed the plan was an invasion of Nicaragua. And they organized, the Sandinistas, realizing this, organized their forces accordingly. They prepared for basically an invasion on the Pacific coast. They expected the Americans to come in one direction, the Hondurans from another direction. You know, they sort of prepared for it. And then in other words, they took it seriously. Now, when Alvarez started making preparations in the course of 1982 and 1983 to carry out his plan. So there was more evidence that this might happen as far as the Sandinistas were concerned. Now, you get to a point in about 1983, where the U.S. Navy was mounting tremendous exercises off of both coasts of Nicaragua, and the Army was exercising in Honduras. And, you know, if ever there was a time that the Sandinistas had to fear an invasion coming, it was just all these maneuvers going on that was right at that time. And it was at that time that the Americans hit upon the idea that they really could take advantage of the fears of the Sandinistas. So they basically started putting out the warning in a kind of a veiled way that indeed they might invade. And I remember talking to one of the top Pentagon men, Nestor Sanchez, at the time for an article series we were doing in Newsday, and he said, remember what happened in the Dominican Republic. That could happen again. And, of course, in the Dominican Republic, you had an American force go in and intervene. Now, so I wrote this up, and I didn't know what to make of it. I assumed that he was serious. But, in fact, I learned later that what he told me and what other people told other reporters at the time was... it comes under the heading of perception management. It is deliberate disinformation to make the other side fear something that, in fact, this government had no intention of doing. But you may remember yourself.
I remember a lot hearing about plans for an invasion of Nicaragua. But are you saying that was just perception management? That was just to scare the Nicaraguans into doing something provocative?
I wouldn't say that there was no plan anywhere in the entire U.S. government, contingency plan for how you would invade Nicaragua. But I was told from the level of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and they, after all, would have to do the work, that they did not have a plan and that they never really conceived of it. In fact, I was told by the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at that time that the idea of an invasion of Nicaragua was regarded as so crazy that they couldn't even contemplate it. Now, perception management is really a cheap way. You know, it's really almost cost-free, with the exception of one thing, which is that your credibility suffers. But in terms of military, in terms of treasure, any other criterion, it's a pretty cheap way of creating an impact, and it had an impact.
Now, you offer as an example of the perils of formulating policy in small, secretive, and homogenous groups. You offer the example of the mining of the Nicaraguan harbor. Why do you think that was a turning point in the U.S. backing of the Contras?
Well, as you noted, the title of the book is Banana Diplomacy, and you know, there really is no expression, banana diplomacy. It doesn't really mean anything specifically, and yet it sums up the idea of a cockamamie, crazy approach to things, where you don't know quite how it's going to come out, but you just sort of do something, and maybe it'll work, maybe it won't work. It's not exactly what you expect from a superpower. And this is what the mining amounted to. It was an attempt to stop third countries from shipping oil and other products to Nicaragua. And the idea was to essentially drive up the insurance rates by letting these mines go off and so on. Now, what they didn't realize, the planners in the State Department and in the National Security Council, and Ollie North was very, very close to this, was that shipping was going through the Gulf at a normal pace, despite mining by Iran or Iraq, despite all sorts of dangers, and that basically the insurance world had adjusted to the danger of mines. And then the second thing they didn't realize was that the whole nature of this so-called covert operation relied on publicity to succeed. That is to say, publicity which would drive up the insurance rates. And yet the planners, and they came from all over the government, never thought through what happens if the U.S. role is exposed. They had no fallback plan. I mean, this is something that just defies description because, you would hope, covert operations you'd think are not usually necessary, and especially military operations like this. But if they are necessary, you'd hope that the people who do them have the professional competence to think through what happens if it goes wrong. And these guys didn't.
Well, you kind of point out that it was partially because of the blunder of mining the Nicaraguan harbor that Congress ended up cutting off military aid to the Contras, and in turn, people from the administration went securing more secretive ways of funding, which resulted in the Iran-Contra scandal. Looking ahead a little bit, now that four indictments have been handed down in the Iran-Contra scandal, Oliver North, John Poindexter, Richard Secord, and Albert Hakim, can you speculate at all about what's going to happen at their trials, what the outcome will be? Do you have any guesses?
I'm afraid that's beyond my competence because, you can look at some of the things that Ali North did. I personally think the most egregious things were in terms of U.S. national interests, leaving aside, the ridiculous idea of selling arms and to try to buy hostages, is what he did within the policy process. He basically acted as the veto. Whenever somebody in the State Department or maybe the Joint Chiefs came up with a plan for containment for a non-military solution in Nicaragua, Ali North was in there blocking it because he was the White House's representative at these talks. And, I mean, that is an egregious thing for which nobody has ever been indicted nor punished. There are a lot of specific charges against him. I guess I just wouldn't want to be in the position of making a judgment. Luckily, I think there's a pretty competent court that'll have to do that.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us. My guest has been Roy Gutman, and his new book is titled Banana Diplomacy, The Making of American Policy in Nicaragua from 1981 to 1987. It's published by Simon & Schuster. Gutman is the national security correspondent for New York Newsday. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.